Mini episode 973 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 973. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here. And we are going to be recapping the 2018 NCAA basketball tournament and doing it with the same two gentlemen, the same two FDH Lounge dignitaries that we had on to preview the tournament. We start with FDH Lounge dignitary, my good friend, Steve Callis, who, of course, can be heard at various points in time in his life on WFAN in New York, SNY in New York, any other number of fine outlets. We're glad that he is back with us here today to discuss what went right, what went wrong with what we thought was going to happen in this tournament. Steve, always a pleasure, my man. Thank you so much for making time today.
Great to be with you as always, Rick, and Joe as well.
Thanks, buddy.
Hello, Joe.
And again, this for the next gentleman I'm going to introduce here, he has requested that I introduce him as hailing from the City of Champions. That could only be my good friend Joe Stazek of 97.5 The Fanatic in Philadelphia, FDH Lounge dignitary extraordinaire, a gentleman who I have been proud and pleased to be on his show, not least of which in the last couple of days, and talking Cavs-Sixers. Of course, these guys together doing their own fine podcast as well, Callis Remarks. You can catch that every week on the Sportsology Radio Network. But again, it is great to have you on, Joe, and great to be discussing your Villanova Wildcats, the 2018 national champions.
Yeah, that's better, Rick. You know, that's better than the last time when you introduced me, so let's keep it that way, will you?
Yeah.
Well, how you guys doing? We're doing pretty good over here in Philadelphia, but it doesn't happen that often, so we're just trying to, savor and squeeze for whatever it's worth, and Flyers punched their ticket to the playoffs. Sixers are doing well, so but we had a couple of parades in the last 2 months, so some of us are doing okay. We're pretty happy right now.
I understand that. The only thing I'm going to say, a little word of warning, is this: hailing from C-Town, of course, with Stipe, with the Cavs, some would say the Lake Erie Monsters in there if you want to count the AHL. I remember doing a podcast with you guys. It was you guys' podcast. You had me on during the World Series that year. It was the night of Game 6, and I was riding high, and I said, El Presidente's throwing out the first pitch tonight. It's all coming together. It's going to happen. Yeah, these things can evaporate very quickly, my friend. Enjoy it while you can.
Yes, they can. Unheard of for a school like Villanova. It's not right up there with the top tier blue bloods, but national titles, that's pretty impressive too for Jay Wright. Not too many folks have one, two. Not too many folks have two. So I think he's 14th, only 14 coaches in the history have two or more, and he's up there now. So I mean, he's college basketball royalty.
How about that? I always talk about the links between Cleveland and Philadelphia, whether it be on your show or here or whatever. Another thing that we share in common is Rally Massimino, who won your previous national championship there, who I am going to go out on a big, big limb and say that he is far more fondly remembered there than he is at Cleveland State, because pretty much
that. LV.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, we had him during the take out a roll of stamps and mail it in portion of his career. You had him for the national championship, so you came out on the winning end of that exchange, Joe.
You know, he kind of, and I didn't deal with him too much. I was at his, a press conference. The kids were like calling for his head. It was really bizarre. It was kind of like this impromptu thing where the kids were kind of the inmates running the asylum, and he kind of changed a little bit. That's what he wanted. You know, with the way he dealt with the media, he got all these kind of endorsements. You know, even his players said he he kind of a little full of himself a little. I think he came down then after a while. After he ended up, he went to UNLV, didn't work out there, went to Prison State. But and then he continued coaching. He was coaching down in Florida, a very small school, right up until he died. He was he liked to coach, like Larry Brown, didn't care where it was. He liked to coach, and certainly put his stamp on the college ranks that win in 85.
Yeah, very charming guy, no question about that. I'm going to start with you here in terms of Villanova winning the title. Your thoughts on it from the aspect of Philadelphia, how they're kind of taking it, and then also, too, they have really kind of become, as you kind of alluded to, almost sort of the new poster child of college basketball, two titles in the last 3 years. And this is one of these things where, again, much like UConn did about 20 years ago, they seem to be kind of nosing their way into the Blue Bloods here, whatever we think of as the top tier of college basketball. Although, again, UConn's kind of a cautionary tale, could be gone here one day, gone the next, because UConn in a couple of years. It's funny what a coaching change will do. You can kind of fade from that point, but I'm sure nobody's thinking about that right now in Philadelphia. It's probably all sunshine and great feelings right about now.
Yeah, it depends which side you're on. It's really weird, the dynamic with Villanova, and we've done plenty of shows on it, because if you're not really in their camp, then you're not in their camp. There's not a lot of gray areas with Villanova. There's still a little bitterness, believe it or not, from when Raleigh kind of broke up the Big Five, 900 years ago, and people are still surly about it. And then you have the other teams, the inner-city teams. I might be in the minority, but I still root for them. I root for Temple. I shouldn't say this publicly, but I root for St. Joe's. I like all the teams. I dealt with them. I dealt with their coaches back in the day when I started in the business. But it doesn't always, go the other way. It's not always reciprocal. And I think a lot of it's jealousy. And it's the mainline kids and, the money and the people from Connecticut and New York. And that's just kind of the perception. But it's hard to argue with what Jay Wright's done. He's named it not. Neither did Villanova has come up in the whole investigation with the FBI thing. He runs a pretty clean program. He gets guys that aren't quite McDonald's All-American. Maybe a tier down, guys that are going to stay for 3 or 4 years and they go. And, he kind of does. And I know it was a saying, I'll steal one from Larry Brown. He does things the right way. His kids play the right way. But, again, there's kind of a dichotomy. You're either in Villanova's camp or you're not. And, but I was at the parade, it was all Villanova. It was all positive. It wasn't just kids from the school. It wasn't the Eagles, but it was good. It was a good time. It's good for the city. It was still uplifting. It was upbeat, and couldn't be happier for Jay and the kids. And it just the other championship got a little hairy down the stretch. Got a little hairy to get to the Final Four. But this one, really, once they got cranking in these games, they won every game by double digits. It wasn't really. It never really got that hairy. Maybe the West Virginia game, they were down 6 with 11 minutes left, but then they ended up winning by 12, And sometimes you're like, wait, how is this happening? Because I was talking to Steve, we were texting during the championship game, and they weren't playing well at all in the first half. They were throwing up bricks against Michigan, and they were down 7 early. Bodner was having his way with Spellman. And they were up 9 at the half, and you kind of scratched your head. I know the DiVincenzo kind of came in and gave a little boost there late in the second half. You're like, how are they up 9? What have they done? And then next thing you know, in the second half, they start pulling away. And they're up 22. And again, you can give a lot of credit to the Italian kid. The Paisan was just unbelievable. It was unbelievable. He shot 8 of 12 from 3 in the tournament. I'm sorry, in the Final Four. And he just, he went nuts. And he's kind of hot and cold. We'll see games in the Big East tournament, the Providence game. He couldn't turn the ball over more. And he's not a typical point guard. He does turn the ball over. You saw him do it late in the game. The game wasn't in question anymore. But he kind of can be feast or famine. And man, he came up with all the confidence in the world. And when he had to go out and guard him. Bomb the lane, and then he would take the ball to the hole, and he was just in one of those zones that I've never seen him play like that. And the game before, it was everyone kind of took their turn. Brunson kind of was steady as they go. Didn't have to play the final game. Had quiet 18 points against Kansas. Pascal was 10 of 11 from the field against Kansas, and he even had one call back when he got one off right as the shot clock expired. But he was lights out. Spellman, for a big man, was knocking down threes. Bridges, the lottery pick, he wasn't even dominant. He was okay here and there. Again, he had a quiet 18 points in the title game, but, they're big guns. The three B's that Steve and I talk about all the time that were freshmen when they won the whole thing, he played significant minutes, and Booth was really the MVP of that game. I know Archie Diacono got it, but he wasn't for Phil Booth. They don't win that first championship. He was kind of quiet. Brunson wasn't exactly Brunson like we know Brunson to be. And Bridges was okay. But they needed performances like, from Pascal and Spellman and Paisan. And that was it. He had 46 points in two games. And they won by 16 and 17 respectively. It's just, they found different ways to beat you. And then they could do it outside, inside, and, the way Brunson handles the ball, he only had two turnovers in the Kansas game to get two in the final game. I mean, he did a nice job protecting the ball. And, at the end of the day, no matter who or how they played, they ended up winning going away. And it was just impressive.
Yes, it was. And a lot to unpack there. You did a very good job of uncovering some of the things there that I wanted to pivot to Steve with. And Steve, I want to ask about a couple of the things that Joe mentioned there in terms of, again, a program that, quote unquote, does it the right way. In a year that is going to be remembered in the broad sweep of history, I think primarily for this FBI investigation and everything that's going on with it there and the mushrooming scandal, for a program like Villanova, that again, as Joe mentioned, aside from Bridges, and he's even a little bit more of a marginal lottery guy, but he's still a lottery guy nonetheless, but that's sort of out of the ordinary for Villanova. They're a program where, again, guys are generally there a couple of years. It's upperclassmen leadership that does it. It's, again, what people want to call the right way of college basketball. So if you were to be cynical and you look at how the tournament is set up every year, I know there's a lot of conspiracy theorists out there that would look at it and say, well, gee, isn't that convenient that the NCAA gets such a good poster child there? But all things being equal, Steve, you would think in a vacuum, at a moment of crisis like this in their history, you'd have to think Villanova is exactly the kind of program the NCAA would like to see ascendant right now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Jay Wright's a high-end guy, always has been, going back to his days at Hofstra. Suits and good looks aside, he's a good recruiter or has good recruiters on his staff. But I think now they're going to go up a level into the blue blood category, and I think, frankly, his good dilemma will be to get these kids. He'll be able to get these top kids now, and how will he do what he's done for the past few years? I mean, as Joe talked about, the three Bs, they were all freshmen 2 years ago, and they won the national title. And so they still stayed 3 years. And I think his future might be with one or two really top recruits who might be one and done. So I don't think you're going to avoid, if you can get those kids, I don't think you're going to say, no, I don't want that because we're doing this the Villanova way. But having said all of that, I had Villanova going to the Final Four. I did not have them winning it, but when I saw the West Virginia game, and Joe and I talked about this on the air on his show in Philly, the West Virginia game was a total slugfest. I don't know how many teams in the country could have beaten West Virginia that night. And for them to not only beat West Virginia, but win going away by 12, I think it was, after I saw that game, I'm like, wow, I don't know who else in the country would have beat West Virginia that night. And then they were certainly from there on, they were on my radar to win it all. Having said that, they had the 2 days later, they shot 4 for 24 from three and still won by double digits. So they weren't just a three-point shooting team, as a lot of people pointed them out to be. They were a very good defensive team. They could find ways to beat you when they shot 4 for 24. Look, in this game, in the championship game, they were 1 for their first 9 from three. They were down 7 after 9 minutes.
Yep.
Joe and I were texting, man, if these guys play good, they're gonna win easily. And they played pretty well at the end of the half. I mean, even DiVincenzo, as good as he was, He was the only guy who hit a three of the first nine they took, and he took a couple of them. But then he got on fire. It's very rare that you see one guy totally take over a game, especially a guard. I know it's a guard-oriented world now, but DiVincenzo, 10 for 15 from the floor. Only three other guys in the history of the NCAA tournament had 30 points and shot 66% or better from the field in the title game. And those three guys are Lew Alcindor, now Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Bill Walton, of course, went 21 for 22 that one year, and Goose Gibbons. So look at the company this kid is in. But he's an incredibly athletic player, which a lot of people seem to not realize. Certainly Jim Sponarkle in an earlier game didn't, until he dunked twice and he said he was deceiving. No, he's not deceiving. He's incredibly athletic. And not only that, they were good taking Villanova off the three. Remember, everybody, oh, they have to take Villanova off the three-point line. And they were great at the beginning, but this kid took threes 3 or 4 feet behind the three-point line. And they were pretty open looks because I think they didn't think he could make it and could make them. And as Joe said, he can be a feast or famine guy. But this was a total feast. I mean, it wasn't just that. It was driving to the basket after they came out to get him on the three. It was pinning that ball, getting an incredible block because he is an excellent athlete. And, you know, I had time to go back and look at the first half because they did play poorly. The first 11 minutes, 9 or 10 minutes, they're down 7. Wagner's having his way with both of their big guys, although he ran out of gas after about 5 minutes. It was really bizarre. Excuse me. No, it really was bizarre. But, you know, DiVincenzo came in and totally changed the way the game was, I'll say, all by himself. You know, Brunson posts down low the first two baskets. He's 2 for 2. He's good. And then he kind of disappeared. It wasn't just foul trouble.
Yeah.
He was 4 for 13 for the game. So after those first two baskets, he was 2 for 11. But that's the kind of team we had. In the pre-game thing that I did with Joe, we were talking about who were the two or three guys who were going to light it up, because they've got six guys who can light it up, and it turned out to be DiVincenzo 1, Bridges a quiet 2, but nonetheless 7 for 12 from the for 18
that's
points.
That's surprising to me because, you're right, Steve.
No, so I just thought there was, you know, DiVincenzo made another great play off a missed shot. He got, I think it was a missed foul shot. He went up and got the rebound, kept the ball alive, and this is when they were losing. And then a Michigan guy picked it up, but his foot was on the line, and they kept the ball after a free throw. And then they made another jumper to cut the lead to, like, 5 instead of 7. And, you know, again, looking at the timing of it all, later in the first half, and Joe's right, they flipped that game right around in a matter of 5 minutes. But that's because Michigan did not score for 5 minutes and 12 seconds after they were up 21-14 in the first half.
I have to say as well that certainly there were a great many folks in the state of Ohio who were rooting for Villanova because, quite frankly, we just always like to see it get stuck to Michigan. So it was very nice for all of us to get to see that and to get to see them come up on the short end of the stick. What's interesting is that East Regional that Villanova came out of in a very, very strange year for the tournament. That's a regional where I only got 2 picks wrong on my bracket in the entire thing here, but the East Regional was not the story of this tournament. The Midwest Regional, which had one of the great regional championship games maybe of all time between Kansas and Duke, outside of that, it didn't have a whole lot else going for it. It was not the story of the tournament. The story of this tournament, without question, the South Regional, as crazy a lineup, the way that it unfolded, as anything that we have ever seen, whether it be the miracle story of Loyola Chicago getting to the Final Four with Sister Jean Schmidt leading them along the way, or that first game with UMBC and Virginia. And I'm going to say this. I promised that our Hoops contributor, Ben Chu, I would mention this on the show. I talked to him before the game. He didn't pick UMBC, but he said, he identified it correctly. He said, this is the type of matchup that could be problematic for a team like Virginia, who really can't come back on anybody. And we saw that. And the flip side of being praised of being as being a great defensive unit is a lot of times, regardless of sport, whenever that's said, it's a nice way of saying you can't come back on somebody if you're behind. And that was pretty much proven once and for all with Virginia in that game. So I'm going to start with you there, Steve, and talk about this one as far as the South Regional and everything that we saw unfolding there. It was a thing where you even factor in Kansas State taking out Kentucky in a game that had an outcome that most people weren't expecting. Arizona flopping in the first round there to Buffalo. One could say maybe a little bit of cosmic payback to the Arizona program for things that may or may not have unfolded in recruiting. So the South Regional might be the most wild regional bracket of all time in any tournament. You could make that case.
Well, I think it was, because the 1, 2, 3, and 4 were out quickly. I'm looking at my South Regional, but it seems to be blacked out. I can't understand why I can't see anything on it.
I got three right in the whole bracket.
But the UMBC upset was, well, you know, it was what, 0-135 or whatever it was. It was just incredible. And what was more incredible to me is it wasn't a game. Never mind coming back. They never even got close. It wasn't one of these. You know, I remember many years ago when I thought Princeton was going to beat Georgetown and Scrabbis got fouled for, like, the last shot, but that was going to be a one-point game. This was never in doubt. It was like they flipped the script totally, and you're right, but it's got to be, look, Tony Bennett defense, Huggins defense. I thought Virginia had, I didn't like that, but you know, I liked Arizona, so what do I know? But you also have to take the big picture look at it, I think, Rick, and say, so Arizona and everything that was going on, we don't really know exactly everything that was going on, but obviously a lot was going on. Look at Michigan State on the other side of the bracket with Tom Izzo and everything that was going on there as well. And you got to figure, in retrospect, that had a great effect on those programs because, again, they all got, all of them were beaten much earlier than I thought they would be beaten, obviously. But yeah, I think the South will go down as the craziest bracket of all time, because then you're like handing it to Kentucky, right? And then what happens? And then Kansas State beats Kentucky. So I didn't think Kentucky, I thought they were too young and they didn't have the superstar, but the first couple of games of the tournament, you saw them growing at the end of the SEC tournament. But they didn't have that guy. You know, they have a Karl Anthony Towns to get to the final or an Anthony Davis to win it all. They just didn't have that guy. But once 1, 2, 3, and 4 are out, and Kentucky was playing pretty well, even then I thought they were going to win it. So, once again, shows you what I know, especially in the South. But again, it's still blacked out there. It hasn't cleared up yet, and I don't think it's going to clear up ever. On my bracket.
Listen, I was very bemused to find out from my best friend who took my bracket and entered it into his office pool there. And this was a pool, I believe, of not just the Cleveland office, but maybe some other offices. He said to me afterwards, hey, you finished 10th. You were just out of the money. I was like, how the hell did that happen? I mean, yes, I had Villanova, but I mean, this must have really been chaos theory at work if I came close to cashing here when, again, like I said, I got three picks right in the entire South Regional. Even getting only two wrong in the East is barely enough to make up for that. You're just going 500 in the two regionals. But it was really, really a crazy thing, Joe. And I got to think that for everybody on the Villanova side, as they're watching the chaos across the bracket there, that was probably just a thought that they had in their head going all the way through, is that by the time we make it to the Final Four, things could be a little bit easier. Now, they end up getting Michigan instead of the team that comes out of the South, so it didn't exactly unfold that way. But it is very interesting that Villanova came out of the one bracket that, if you want to say, was probably the most chalk heavy. The South was anything but that. The South was, again, as crazy as anything we've ever seen.
The whole tournament was nuts, and I had I did a little game on one of my shows, and I had 16 things, most memorable moments of tournament past, you know, then you whittle it down, and I could call it a matchup. It got down to the title game with UMBC versus Christian Leitner shot, and UMBC won. I mean, people really revere that game because, like Steve said, and I asked, you know, one of my producers, he goes, "It should have won." It wasn't close. You know, it was wild. 9 of 11 and bombing away from 3 at 28 points. Virginia had no answer for those guys. And again, it's been so cool to hop in at some point, and you know, eventually the Princeton game with Pete Carril and Georgetown, where they came extremely close to taking down G-Town back in 89 or whatever. But it hasn't happened since. Not
even that close. This was a blowout. And, you know, very bad squad. I know there's a lot of, you know, criticism about him not performing well in the tournament. I mean, this, this is as bad as it gets, being the first team to get knocked off. And I like my Michigan coach, but, and they play great defense, but just not that nice. They didn't. And, you know, for, and I'll bring it back to Villanova, and I think Steve Hudson is humble. One of the reasons that they were able to kind of break through some of their shooting slumps is they play great defense, too. I mean, they were known for their shooting, and listen, they've been 13 threes against Kansas. I mean, you got to be, after coming off a 4-for-24 performance, Bill Self's got to be like, really? And he said, you know, they looks up, they're down 22-4. He's like, I mean, he even said, because you got to play a perfect game after that. The rest of the way, you got to play a perfect game. You know, and again, they were just bombing away, and if they go in, you look a lot better. But they play great defense. They play great defense on Michigan, and they held them, like Steve Fitzgerald, for a stretch, and they gave them time to kind of get their legs, you know, and get going. I love the fact you mentioned that game against Duke and Kansas. I thought they would have a better shot against Kansas because Steve knows how I feel, and he feels the same way about Kansas, you know, in big games. But it wasn't really their fault. They just outshot, and you know, it's one of those nights. You just, if you're on the wrong end of that, you know, what can you do? I mean, what can you really do? But again, Nova can beat you in different ways. You mentioned the West Virginia game, you know, kind of breaks. You know, you're always gonna, no matter how good you are, you're gonna end up as one of those games where there's a critical moment or stretch where you have to just break through. With 11 minutes, they were down six, and they ended up breaking through that, and then they kind of cruise from there. You know, once they get going, you know, they get going, and they won the game by 12. You know, they were awful against Texas Tech, and they end up winning by 12 again. They made teams look worse than the law, but they really do. I mean, Alabama was an athletic team, and they hung with the Cats for a while, and they lost by 23. You know what I'm saying? Like, you look up, no matter who or how they played, and I'm not saying this because I went down trying to look at this objectively, no matter who or how they played, at the end of the day, they toasted the victories in these games, which was, you know, it was okay for my, you know, for my cardio, my heart and everything, but it was just, you know, because I'm down at the tank a couple years ago. This one was a little easier, but still, I mean, it's tough to win six games in the tournament. They have won 13 of the last 14 tournament games, and you got to give a lot of credit to Jim Reed and the way they move that ball around and the way they play defense and buying into the defense. Tom Clark, like one of the main guys here at Comcast, following the team, who was out with them. You know, when he was in Boston with them, and you know, of course, in San Antonio. His final piece before the title game, he asked the three leaders, actually, if it could come down to a game-winning shot or a defensive stop, to a man, they said we'd like, you know, defensive stops. That's the way we want to win this. We want to end this. I mean, that's how much they cared about defense. They bought into that, you know, the Jay Wright defense way and the right way to play the game, and that really helped them at times when they were, you know, stuck in the mud. You know, the way they were shooting. Because past Villanova teams, you know, they feast or famine, you know, you live by the three, you die by the three, you have a bad shooting night, and you're out. And they have had many of those in tournaments past, but this team really bought into playing defense. And, you know, Michigan was the fourth-ranked defense in the country coming in, but, you know, Nova out-defensed them and made them look a lot worse than they are. You know, they won 14 wins in a row. They were hot. And Xavier Simpson and Bodner and these guys were just, you know, killing it the whole way. Coming back from a 10-point deficit against Chicago Loyola in the second half. And again, they were on a roll. They made them look very ordinary. They made them look very ordinary, which they pretty much did to every team they faced.
They did. It was a heck of a run that they were on. And again, I have to say, first of all, what you were saying about Villanova, that there is a lot of talk right now that they're going to go down as one of the great single season teams of all time. And I think the tournament run does a lot to back that up. I want to go back to another point that you made earlier when you were talking about on your show covering some of the great moments in the tournament. I'm going to set this up here for Steve and for the listeners, because I just happen to be on on hold for your show a couple weeks ago when I was last on. A very painful moment for Joe. I was feeling very bad for him. Live radio in a major market, you never know how these things are going to go. They were doing that thing. It was a thing where, you know, pick whatever the moment you think is better, this moment or this moment. The caller wasn't getting it. And he starts freestyling for the greatest moment. Like, I don't know, wasn't there a moment with Wichita State a couple of years ago? I'm just sitting there on hold. I'm just dying. I'm like, oh, poor Joe. And Joe is doing a masterful job of guiding him back into the center of the road. I was hurting for you on that one, Joe. Live radio, man.
There was a matchup, I think, in the first round where I had Christian Leitner against, like, you know, Royce Drewshot or something, you know, the Valpo game, like a first round game, and the guy was struggling with it. I'm like, let me help you. It's Christian Leitner. Goodbye. I didn't want him, you know, throwing out Royce Drew there and having Leitner get knocked out the first round. But the fact that they didn't understand the game, I'm just like, maybe I'm not explaining this right. I don't know, but
Joe, I got it.
Here and bang my head against the wall.
No, I understood it. You did a fine job of explaining it. You're just always going to get some callers that are a little bit obtuse. But I'm sitting there on hold waiting to come on, and I was just feeling bad for you. I'm like, oh, poor Joe. That was just, I was just cringing for you. But it was it's funny to look back on. It definitely is. But as we're looking at this tournament here, I'm going to start with you, Joe, in terms of bringing this full circle. Anything that we didn't cover about the tournament yet that you find noteworthy?
I think aside from Villanova, really the storylines or the moments was the UMBC, you know, win and the Chicago Loyola run. You know, you see George Mason and 11 seed get there. No seed lower than 11, except for, yeah, no seed lower than 11 has ever, you know, advanced past the semifinal game. And, you know, you got to give him a lot of credit. I don't think people that ended up doing very well in the brackets paid close attention to Chicago Loyola. I mean, that was a good squad. It really was a good squad. Probably not, you know, in terms of, you know, couldn't really hang with the big boys as things got, you know, bigger and tighter and the lights got a little brighter. But, you know, again, and aside from that, the UMBC game, you know, Kentucky kind of did their thing. They went a couple rounds, and they showed how young they are. Duke's always hanging around, no matter, you know, how many one-and-doners they have. And, you know, Bagley played very well. Grayson Allen, a little bit of a disappointment in his senior year. As if you recall, when he was a freshman, he came up front along with Tyus Jones. He gave that team a lot of energy. And in that championship win over Wisconsin, he kind of, you know, regressed a little bit. And Steve talks about that all the time, how he dribbled around for like 19 seconds and took a shot, almost went in, but again, just not quite, you know, Grayson Allen-like. And you mentioned it, you know, Rick, the whole scandal and what was going on at Michigan State and Arizona might have had an effect on these big teams. You know, you have your one-and-dones that oftentimes, I know Kentucky won the whole thing a few years ago with Anthony Davis, but it's rare to see that. But, you know, oftentimes the big guys, you know, they do their thing and don't, you know, usually advance to Elite Eight. But they got bounced, and there was a lot of issues with Michigan State. We know about all the scandals, you know, Arizona as well. I just thought there was a lot of everything. This whole year has been nuts if you think about it. You had FBI investigation. You had a 3-on-5 game in November. I don't know if you remember that. Alabama had three guys left. Everyone else got kicked out of the game. And, three freshmen making the All-American first team. I mean, you just had a lot of weird goings on this year. And then you have Villanova 2 in 3 years from, you know, again, they're not quite a blue blood team. Maybe they're going to be a blue blood team, but I call them kind of a baby blue blood team. They're kind of getting there. But the fact that a small school in the middle of nowhere, you know, right up the street from here, called Villanova, where if you polled, you know, most of the country, but like, I don't know where that is. The hell's Villanova? You know, if you look at the teams who have won three or more championships in their history, they all are geographically, you know, prominent. You know, they're all states or cities. And you've got Villanova. And to win three championships in their history, and they're still going. I mean, Jay Wright has a real top recruiting class coming in, and he's just a class act. The team is extremely classy to a man. I just the way he's turned this program around, because there was a time a few years ago where, hey, Jay Wright can't get it done in the postseason. He's a great recruiter. He brings in some talent, but he can't get it done. There was a lot of talk. Maybe he'll jump to the NBA and we'll go in a different direction or another. But, you know, I got to tell you, he's been to three Final Fours now. He's won two championships. In the last 5 years, in the last 4 years, he's more wins than any other program in a four-year stretch of history, which is something, because, I mean, they took out that Duke team from 97 to 01. But the most impressive thing I thought in a five-year span that jumped off the page when I saw it, they haven't lost back-to-back games. To me, that's just unbelievable. You know, I want to talk about bounce-back ability and how he keeps his teams grounded. And, you know, I'm proud of the guy. He's a great guy. He's very approachable. He'll come on, you know, your show and do whatever you need him to do. And, you know, he's never gotten too big for who he is. And, you know, I thought it was a wonderful tournament. Obviously, it's a little bit more wonderful for me. my bracket, I've got to be honest, guys, after the Arizona debacle, I never even looked at my bracket. I have no idea how I did. Steve had to remind me I had Michigan in the Final Four. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. I've never looked at it since Arizona, you know, got gassed in the first round. I ended up looking at my score because I submitted one for Fanatic, and, you know, I was, you know, in like the 70th percentile or something, but, you know, because I had Nova winning the whole thing. But other than that, you know, that's why I don't usually fill these out, because usually I'm out like by, you know, halftime of the second game, which I pretty much was this year. But it was a fun tournament. It really was. And, you know, what can you say? You know, Nova, you know, they got it done, and they emerged, and again, you know, two titles in 3 years. It's something to be said for.
Absolutely. And again, it's not just two titles in 3 years, but it's how dominant they were through the season and en route to the championship itself. Quite a performance. Steve, I'll turn to you. Anything that we didn't really touch on yet that you feel we need to hit?
Just a couple more things on Villanova. I think we would be remiss if we didn't mention their two big men, Pascal and Spellman. These guys were good during the year. I thought really came to play in the tournament. Pascal was the MVP of the semi. I know it was a blowout, but he was 10 for 11. Here's a guy who was playing at Fordham.
Yeah.
He's a transfer from Fordham.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard to believe how good he's become. And Spellman was also a beast. They had some trouble with Wagner, and they have some things to work on. But when you send out five guys who can shoot threes, and that's what they do, those guys were good on the boards. They were good defensively. And I just think we always talk about the three Bs, and rightfully so, and DiVincenzo stole the show in the final. But I think we should mention them as well. And I just want to try and put Villanova in a little bit historical perspective, not based on me, but based on what a couple of coaches said. Because I think some people are going to say, well, you know, look what happened in the South. Nobody got through there. There was an 11 and 5. Yeah, they beat a 3. But Beilein said, quote, that team right there could win a lot of Final Fours, not just the 2018 one. And poor Bill Self, Joe and I are not Bill Self fans, but we can't blame Bill Self for that loss.
No.
But he said after the game, and he's frankly got a higher, Beilein's a great coach, I think, but certainly Self has done more and won a national championship. But after the game, Bill Self said, quote, that's the goodest team as we've played against that I can remember. Now, that takes in a lot of ground.
Yeah.
So I think when some people are going to look back and go, oh, that was the craziest 16 beat the 1, and the 11 came out of the, and the, it was a 3 in the final, you know, I think you got to take a step back and understand. And this is with a, I would say, subpar Brunson performance in the final.
Yeah.
They also had two Naismith John Wooden Award nominees, which is an incredible thing, Bridges and Brunson. I think Brunson deserved it. To me, that's just an incredible accomplishment as well. So I think on the big picture, and I agree with what those coaches essentially said, and that is this was not a weaker tournament or they had an easy way to the final. They dominated, but they dominated in different ways. You know, they held Michigan to 3 for 23 from 3. We didn't even talked about their good defense. Michigan shot 3 for 23, and they're a good.
Yeah.
Duncan Robinson, one of the best three-point shooters in the country, didn't score a point.
Yep.
And that's credit to their defense. So I think defensively it's always harder to see. You look at teams like Virginia and West Virginia, incredibly defensive teams. But not made, as Joe said, to come back from anything, frankly. But then you look at a team like Villanova, who can do it offensively, but this year, I think, Joe can correct me, maybe better than 2 years ago, could really do it defensively and did do it defensively, 4-for-24 from the field from three, and they beat Texas Tech. And then they come back in this game down 7. And again, in the second half, it, like, to me, it wasn't a game. Once Villanova started making threes, it just wasn't a game. So I think they're higher up, in my opinion, than a lot of recent teams. And I think what those two coaches said kind of proves that.
I do agree with that. I think to whatever degree, though, Bill Self, when he says something like that, it is a little self-serving when you catch an ass-whooping to that degree to go, OMG, team for the ages! You know, I mean, they
could
were.
Could be true.
Yeah, I mean, they were, but I'm not sure he's the guy you can trust in that circumstance saying that. But anyways, a great recap of the tournament, as I knew it would be with you gentlemen. Steve, thank you so much for being on today.
Fantastic. Always great to be with you two guys. Thanks very much.
Really appreciate it. And Joe, once again, congratulations to your school, and thank you so much for being here for this great breakdown.
Hey, guys, always a pleasure. You know, it's a pleasure talking about you guys, especially, you know, wrapping up College Hoop and a great tournament that it was.
Always love getting you guys together from your great podcast, Callous Remarks. I'll look forward to the next time we do it on whatever subject it happens to be. Thank you both again so much for being here today, and thank you everybody for joining us for FDH Lounge Mini Episode number 973.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.